Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by today. Today we are going to do a couple different things. First of all, I would be happy to hear from some of you with your New Year's resolutions, as today is the last day of the year. 2013 has been a very strange year for me. Lots of ups and downs, lots of challenges. I did turn 65 and became, legally speaking, a senior citizen. Lost my sister. Struggled with many financial and kind of convoluted situations that I'm still trying to sort out and either throw away or keep. And I think my New Year's resolution this year is going to be to take charge again. I guess I thought because I was I retired from a job that I loved totally and left people that I felt like they were family, that I was in search of something that was going to replace that. And I think that's a mistake that we make. I don't think you can replace things that are that dear to you. You can do other things, but you can't really replace that thing. And I think that's the mistake I've been making over the last couple years, is thinking to myself that I needed to find something as rewarding and as special as that last I don't even like to call it a job, because when I was doing it and I was immersed in it, it wasn't like a job. It was like my life. And I think it was a big mistake for me to think that I just needed to find something that was as rewarding and didn't look past some of the other things that I could have made rewarding, if that makes sense. So my resolution is to let go of the old, words I've heard before, words I've said before, and embrace the new. And I do have a game plan. Yesterday I spent a long time with a lady that I am going to partner with, and I am going to take complete responsibility for a green sober house out here in Loxahatchee. For those of you who don't know what a sober house is, I mean, obviously the name tells you, it's a place where, you know, you don't participate in any kind of mind-altering anything. You stay clean and sober. And in the world of addiction, which we've talked about on the show many, many times, it's a pretty convoluted world. There's alcohol, which is legal. There's drugs, which are in some cases legal and become addictive, in some cases illegal. Shelley and I on the show have talked about medical marijuana. We've talked about alcoholism. We've talked about drug addiction. We've given statistics on how big the world of addictions really is, and the manifestations of addictions, the losses, the fact that some people lose everything they've ever had, family, material things, everything. And a big part of our homeless population is due to addictions. And all kinds of variables in regard to that. Addictions that were prescribed to you in some cases. The simple six-pack after work at night. The couple Manhattans during lunch. Whatever started you and led you into that place that you can no longer climb out of is an addiction. So the sober house is transitional. It takes somebody who has gone through a 30-day plus, if needed, detox, and then to put them in a safe place, a home that is drug-free, that supports all the things that you have to follow through on to keep yourself in this place, is what a sober house does for you. If you do a detox, a 30-day detox, and you are really, really in trouble addiction-wise, and you go right back to what sent you there to begin with, does that even seem a little bit wise? Well, it isn't. It's really not the right idea. Mind you, you will need to go back to your family. You will need to reopen communications with the people that you love. But you're going to have to put everybody in a different place. You're going to have to figure out how you can stay your own person. So, transitionally speaking, this gives you an opportunity to walk for a while with the crutches until you try to put all your weight on both those sprained ankles. You understand? It's an opportunity to meet with support on a daily basis, not the trials and tribulations of being the one who has to have all the answers, but just be able to get well within yourself. Reinforce your own personal courage, reinforce your own personal belief in yourself. All of those things come with a transitional house, and that's what we're going to offer. It's here in Loxahatchee, and it will be, it's open, it's functioning. If anyone would like to hear more about it, you can contact me on the show. Give me a phone number. You can contact me at reenie.brewer91@gmail.com. And let me know that you are thinking about doing something to bring in yourself to a better place in the year of 2014. And if you are in that struggle, I want to wish you lots of strength and lots of ability to see the end of the tunnel so it leads you. That light at the end of the tunnel is what you follow. If you can't see it today, you probably need some help in being able to focus in on that light at the end of the tunnel. So that's my New Year's resolution. I'm going to be back in charge of my own life, just like some of you will want to do as well. Before we get into the workbook today, though, I want to bring Shelley in, and I'm hitting her by surprise with this. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Surprises, you know.
I know. Well, we are going to work on the workbook, but I thought to myself, I was going to do New Year's resolutions, possibly touch them on Thursday, because I thought by that time everybody will have made them and had some real answers. And then I thought to myself, you know what? What makes it real is to make a decision about it today and start fresh tomorrow morning. So do you have a New Year's resolution, Shell?
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, I guess it is a New Year's resolution. Since I left the job back in September, I haven't moved forward as quickly on the book as I would have preferred. I was actually thinking on that earlier this week, ironically enough. And although I'm very happy with some of what I have accomplished, it would have been my preference to have been further along by now. So my New Year's resolution is to be less distracted and more focused, to kind of like what you're saying, take a little bit more control, not allow life events to kind of derail me so easily. And I'm not beating myself up over that, but in the same token, that's exactly what I've done over the last month. You know, some stuff has happened in my family also, and I've kind of allowed myself to be distracted for a couple of days at a time, and then I get back to the book, and then I'm like, and then I'm back on a good work ethic again. So in the new year, I want to be less distracted and more focused, and I think that's going to help me accomplish it, because since I've made that decision, I'm already making better progress again. One of the things that one of my mentors, Brendan Burchard, talks about is he says, if you want to accomplish something, especially if it's like writing a book or doing something from a creative standpoint, you're creating something in written form, you're creating something artistically, you're trying to plan to open a business, anything like that where you have to sit down and do some creation, whether it's business or artful. He said that you have to block out time every day for it and not allow life to encroach on that. He said it's like you're making an appointment to go somewhere, you're just going to be there. And he said a lot of time when people work from their own four walls trying to become self-employed, they allow the distractions of family and things that happen to constantly derail them, and they'll say, well, I'll start on it tomorrow, that type of thing. And he said, so what you have to do is, he said, you have to make an appointment with yourself. He says, block out, and he says, and be reasonable in the beginning until it becomes habit, but say Monday, Tuesday, and Friday between 2 and 4, this is what I'm going to be doing. And he said, you have to stick to it, and he says, and you will actually create a habit around that. So that's what I started doing this week, and so far it's working, and I like it. I like having to commit to myself because I'm actually more productive during those hours. So it's kind of fun to work with it and actually see that it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's actually making me more creative during those block times.
Well, and it's also a gift that you give to yourself, which is mm-hmm. rewarding, because when we set aside specific Shelley time, specific Rini time, that's a gift to us, especially when you become, involved in so many other lives, which both of us are, and you get to the point all of a sudden where you think to yourself, you know, the last time I paid any attention to myself, I don't even remember what I was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember thinking about this is for Rini. And, of course, never giving yourself that is one of the things that opens the road to addictions, by the way. It's kind of a vicious circle, but you almost convince yourself that that drink is the your time, that joint is the your time, that hot fudge sundae is the your time. So it leads to those kind of addictions. And if you can give yourself that space on a regular basis, you don't have the need to make up a reason to spend it by yourself. You're doing it. And it's incredibly important, especially for those of us who, as I said, have got such full lives with so many different stories going on in one, that, you know, if you don't do that, other things can happen to you as well. Your health gets in trouble. Your mental health gets in trouble. So all of these things are great. And I agree with you, by the way, because I'm writing a book too, and I haven't touched it in 2 months. And then when all this stuff happened with my sister, of course, I started thinking about the book again. And to be honest with you, I haven't gone back into it because I'm too emotional right now. So, but the time will come now, and now I have all these other things that came back into my memory that are going to be in the book now that I had really forgotten about until I spent those few days with my sister before she passed. So Everything always happens for a reason, I guess, is the truth of the game.
Yeah,
so
and you have
you
a heartwarming way of relating stories. So just for, you know, for anybody who's out there, when your book does finally come out, which I'm looking very much forward to, it's going to be funny and poignant. And, I mean, there's sometimes just a little excerpt you had me read. In one moment, it was very, very touching, where it brought tears to my eyes when you were talking about your little sister that passed away, and then you're talking about some of the goofy things your family have done, and then the next pages I'm laughing. So it's an emotional ride, but it's something that's very enjoyable, and the people will definitely benefit from it. So I'm glad that you're refocusing on that, because it's going to be It's going to be a great book when it comes out, because I like your writing style. It's like you're sitting down, you know, having coffee with somebody and just kind of relating your life story. You have a very colorful life.
It's true. The name of the book is going to be My Life in a Nutshell, which I think is appropriate.
Not in quote, right?
So, and I do think, by the way, for any of you out there who have thought about this or thought about writing your memoirs or any of those things, Shelley and I are both very, very big advocates of writing, because it is incredibly therapeutic and many times helps heal old injuries and old broken hearts or cracked hearts. And is good for you. So if you've ever given it any thought, maybe that could be something you embark on in the year of 2014, is starting to write some of your old memories. And I just watched the movie the other night, The Notebook. And there's been many stories like that where the elderly couple starts talking, and it goes back, you know, Fried Green Tomatoes was another one. It was not couple-related, but it was, you know, the memories of someone
mm-hmm.
else.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite.
Yeah, one of mine, too. In The Notebook, it's wartime, and this couple, these two teenage kids become a couple and everything, and it goes through the whole situation. It's a beautiful story, but it made me think about how many different things happen to you in your lifetime that change your life forever. And sometimes it's 1 minute out of your whole life, and it changes. And it made me think of how many times we've talked about the ripple effect, and how many times we've talked about how even discussed one day the movie The Butterfly Effect, and how
yeah.
much that particular movie meant to me and made me understand that each choice, each and every choice you make sends you in a different direction. And it's like amazing. And in this story, The Notebook, I mean, they drift apart because her mother knows he's not rich and he's not this and he's not that. And he goes in search of her again and just by chance sees her embracing her new fiancé. So he walks away, you know, so he walks away and goes back to his life and does what he needs to do. But that, what difference would it have made if he'd have walked into the restaurant and she'd been sitting there by herself? But it just, I don't know, I find it to be... I find life to be very interesting, I guess is the truth of the matter. And it amuses me to see what kind of funny games can happen to us with the different decisions that we make. So I look forward to reading your book, too, Shell, and I've read and listened to little excerpts of it. And, of course, your book is different. It's going to be about knowledge and the things that you've learned, but it's so... It's also your life story.
Yep. And what I like about it, and a lot of this is a lot of the coaching that you've given me over the past decade, But I'm also turning my book into more of a conversational tone, where a decade ago I was very angry by a lot of what I learned, and I was almost like it had an activist tone to it, where now it has a conversational tone. So I'm actually glad that my book didn't come out a decade ago, because I like the tone of it better. I think it'll be more comfortable for more people to be able to read it and benefit from it than a decade ago. I think a decade ago, the only people that really would have kind of latched onto it would have been people that kind of already got this lifestyle. And I would like to reach people that don't really understand it or even agree with it, but as they read it, they're kind of comfortable with the way I lay the facts out. So that's kind of the vantage I'm coming from now, and I've changed that over the decade, and I kind of like where I'm going now. And I credit you with some of that because of some of the coaching you've given me.
Thank you. You are factual. It's your personality. You are factual. And I've always known that. And part of me has always really appreciated that factual part, because when I'm looking for facts, I would say, Shelley, what about this? And you'd give me facts. So, but I do think it's healthier for you to put a Shelley spin on it. I think
right.
With a Shelley spin on it, because you're also, and there probably are people that know you or think that they know you pretty well and don't know what kind of a friend you can be. So I think that will lend to the truth of the book. So I think it will be beneficial at the end of the day that you have put a little bit more of Shelley into it along with the facts. So I think that's a good thing.
Oh, cool.
So
thanks.
Hoping a couple other people would call. I kind of left messages for a couple people that call all the time, but everybody is so crazy right now. I've been talking to Daniel, who calls the show every now and then, and he's finally fallen into his niche, I think. So I get weird little texts or little messages from him on Facebook. I have to stop. I have to stop. He's telling me yesterday, and I said, listen, honey, slow down. Breathe, you know, and I haven't heard lately what happened, but he's I have a lot of things happening, but I'm feeling anxious. Please pray for divine direction for me. I don't want to make decisions and regret it. So also pray for me to be able to be still and observe. I'm expecting great news. I just need to be still. Other than that, I will be sending you an invite to something in 2 weeks. So, and this is the relationship we have, you know, because that's what I do to him when he's all excited. If you listen to the show, which I know Shelley has, you've heard me say these things to him. So I wrote back to him, breathe, Daniel. Listen. Don't talk. Nothing really stops when you do. It keeps on moving. Let the magic catch you. So he writes me back a
what?
Bunch of heart smiley faces.
Well, that's a very profound comment there, you know, and it's and that's what happens to us a lot of times. That really is more profound advice than I think you may realize, but that's what happens to people. We get so distracted, kind of like what happened to me over the last couple months. We get so distracted either by things that are not moving us forward at a particular venture, or in trying to control everybody else involved in moving a venture forward. And sometimes you just have to relax, take a breath, and like you said, and let the magic catch up with you, because things are moving and shaking around you. And sometimes when you try to over-control a situation and don't allow it to unfold, you can actually created opening up in a way that's not best for you. And people need to know how to, you have to be directed. I'm not saying that, you know, you just sit at home and say, oh, I hope this happens, I hope this happens. That's not what I'm saying. But when you've got things in motion, and sometimes you just have to take a breath and allow it to move forward. And that's very difficult for people, especially people that are a little controlling, you know, And there's kind of a neat balance to get there between knowing when you need to actually be doing something and when you just need to relax and let yourself recharge. Because if you get too frantic, you can actually miss things that are opening up right in front of you, and you don't see it happening because you're so focused over here, you don't see the panoramic view, and you don't see all the other things that are coming at you simultaneously. So that's kind of an art, and it really is beneficial when you can start becoming that open to everything that's around you.
Yeah, you have to stop and look and listen. You know,
right.
You really,
yep.
really have every now and then. Otherwise, you miss a lot. I always tell people that about when they have little children and they're frenzied all the time. And I say, you know why? Because you're trying to keep everything neat and tidy. And resign yourself to knowing for the next 10 years, nothing's going to be neat and tidy. And if you can, like, it becomes a better experience, you know. And that's the truth, too. That is the truth. Everything is not always neat and tidy. And if you have that kind of personality, sometimes that ruins things for you because that's what you're worried about instead of enjoying the moment. Like letting a one-year-old put his hand in the middle of his birthday cake. Some parents would be like, oh, my God, and other parents would relish that moment. So there's a lot of things to be said for letting go of what you think is supposed to be if you're doing everything the right way and embracing the things that will happen regardless of how you feel about it and enjoy those moments instead of trying to make them into something else. So we're already down to a half hour. So, and I really would like to finish these 12, I think there's only 12. Yeah, the 12.
Queenie, before we get into the bully, was there any update on Jahi?
You know what? I got up early this morning, but I was doing things around the house, and I guess I kind of like closed it out of my mind because there was a lot of turmoil last night on the TV about that.
I watched a video of the parents speaking. They're he's very quiet. She does most of the talking, but she's very articulate, very calm. They really, really believe that there is life in their daughter. The father did talk in one of the videos, and he's saying that he saw her move and stuff. So I was wondering, but the video that I watched, I think, was a couple days old, and then you had said that some of the solutions they thought were there for them, these people retracted. So maybe we'll recap that when we come back Thursday. But over the next couple of days, there should be more information that should hit the internet then.
Okay, right while we're talking, 13-year-old girl wants to know if her smiling, giggling, dropping off her sister every day at kindergarten lies motionless in a California hospital bed, hooked up to machines that doctors say are the only thing keeping her heart beating. There have been days of prayers, protests for Jahi McMath. There was a fierce court battle as a devastated family fought to keep her on life support and doctors argued she had already died. The case drew national attention and fueled debate. Doctors and a judge have declared her brain dead and said there's no chance Jahi will come back to life. A deadline loomed Monday as a judge said the hospital could disconnect the machines after 5 p.m., but shortly before Jahi would have been cut off, the same judge extended his order to 5 p.m. on January 7th. This child was sitting on death's row, said a family attorney. This was a facility that was hell-bent on ending this child's life today, and court stepped in. Children's Hospital Oakland spokesman Sam Singer said the hospital would comply with the order. Earlier, the girl's family told reporters it had located a facility in New York City willing to take Jahi. The Oakland Hospital, however, refused to agree to allow us to proceed in that manner. Now, see again, what kid said that, right?
I don't understand
that. attorneys for the family are filing a new complaint in federal court requesting a temporary restraining order and injunction to prevent the hospital from disconnecting Jahi from the life support. They also are filing an appeal with the California appellate courts. Asked about the New York facility, Singer said that the hospital has no conversations with any such place. It's unclear what will happen next, but one thing is certain. There are no winners in this very tragic case. Family members say this is something I never read before. Family members say the eighth grader was alert and talking after doctors removed her tonsils, adenoids, and extra sinus tissue in a surgery earlier this month. Doctors had recommended the surgery to treat pediatric obstructive sleep apnea, a condition which made her stop breathing in her sleep and caused other medical problems. Before the surgery, Jahi said she was worried that she would never wake up, according to her uncle. She seemed fine after the surgery, but asked for a popsicle because her throat hurt. It wasn't long before something went terribly wrong. In the intensive care unit, the girl began bleeding profusely, an image her mother told CNN would be forever seared in her mind. According to the family members, Jahi went into cardiac arrest. Days later, she was declared brain dead. That's more information than they've ever given before. This is actually quite a long story, and there's more stuff. So I think we will wait until Friday and check up on this particular site again and see if there's more information. But for the time being, we're looking at January 7th. And it sounds to me like it's become very bureaucratic. And maybe that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a good thing.
Yeah, the fact that the judge came to the 7th is a good thing. Because at least it lets them do some more research and see. But I'm flabbergasted that the hospital is not cooperating with moving the child. What do they care once she's out of their hospital? Why should they even interfere with something like that?
Why do you think? Think about it. Why do you think?
Well, because it makes them look bad and the other hospital look good.
Yep. And maybe they don't want anybody, you know, reading their mail.
Gotcha. Right. Well, so, anyway, I do feel a sense of relief for the family that they have till the 7th now to see what they can work out. That's actually good news to me.
Yep, I think it is too. I mean, I think the whole thing is tragic, but I also understand, they've won a battle. They haven't won the war, but they've certainly won a battle. So kudos to them for standing their ground and letting themselves be heard. Sometimes that's all you can do, and sometimes it leads to a good place, and sometimes it doesn't. So I'm pleased.
Can you imagine if this young girl, because I believe all things are possible, can you imagine if this young girl actually regained consciousness again? What a landmark case that would be. So if there's anybody out there that is affected by this case, I would send prayers to this family, because I've seen other miracles happen, and who knows, this could be a landmark case.
I've seen a lot of miracles happen right in my own life, so I believe in miracles, but I also ache a little bit for the turmoil that's going on for these people right now, because any clear answers, they're just standing their ground and doing what they believe in, which is commendable, but doesn't always lead you to where you want it to lead you to. So I hope it does, and I hope that the outcome is a good one. So but we will talk about this on Friday, because by that time there may be more news. So let's get into our workbook. And our next myth is bullies are evil and dangerous. The truth is, the worst acts of violence are committed by people who feel like victims. They are angry and want revenge. Furthermore, you will learn in the course of this seminar that based on the modern definition of bullying, we are virtually all bullies. That particular myth is kind of summed up in several of them, and this is just another way of looking at it. And I tend to agree with that, too. I tend to find that although I think there are some little children, before they've had a chance to let life taint their behavior, have a tad of bullying in them. I gave a lecture years ago about being in a schoolyard, in a preschool yard, and having taken care of many small children as a young woman, I can tell you that almost always, if you have 5 to 6 little people that are aged 2, you're going to see the baby, you're going to see the bully, you're going to see the socialite, you're going to see the the little monster. They're already there. They're really already there. And but the good thing about a 2-year-old bully, which there is, they have time to readjust their way of looking at things, and that's, of course, the adults in their life. That's their job to make sure that they get past that, not to reinforce it and to help it blossom into something that's worse or put them in a place where they get bullied because they're being such a brat. You know, it's kind of like a vicious circle. So I do believe.
Yeah, the one thing that's interesting about that comment is that, and I do believe that everybody has a time when they're in victim mode, and everybody has a time when they're a bully. I recognize in myself sometime, you know, I'm frustrated at work, I'm in the middle of something, and although in my case it's few and far between, somebody walks in and interrupts me, and I bark at them. Well, that's being a bully. It's not their fault that I'm in the middle of something. They came in, they knocked on my door politely and said, "You have a moment?" And, you know, and I think everybody's gone there. Or, you know, I watch my niece. She gets yelled at by her mother over something, and then she turns around and she pinches her brother because she's pissed off she just got yelled at about something. She takes it out on her little brother. So we've all seen that type of behavior. And then when you get somebody that's really, really injured, then they become a bully. It's not that they have bullying moments or victim moments. They kind of take on that persona almost throughout the day, and that's when it really starts affecting their life and the lives around them. But I do agree with him that for the most part, unless you're talking about somebody that has a clinical diagnosis, like somebody who's a sociopath, I think most bullies are injured people. And once you can take care of why they're hurt or angry, the behavior stops. Because especially a young child, they don't know how to find an appropriate outlet for what they're feeling. So because they're feeling badly, it's almost like a knee-jerk reaction. They have to vent it, and they vent it in the wrong places, unfortunately. You know, and we see adults that are like that too. But it's really prevalent among children, and it's easier to see. Once you get into the workplace and things like that, it's not as easy to identify it, although people realize that they have a grumpy boss or an unreasonable boss or something like that, and what it is, they're really a bully.
Well, and I agree with all of that, and I do agree that we all have our days. Days when you know, when things are easier for us to handle, and things when they're not, and our behavior addressed to others can be mistaken for not liking somebody, even hurting somebody's feelings in that way,
mm-hmm.
or bully, or any of those things. And I think that's, of course, part of the wheel that makes the world go round. But I think repetition of that kind of poor behavior is what really wears people down.
Right, right.
Who is chronically and constantly belittling them or never, ever finding a way to support them or make them feel as though they're good at something and important at something and have meaning in this life, then that's when somebody really gets wore down, and then that's when we read all these horrible stories that we read all the time.
Right,
and that's
right.
kind of abuse. And words do hurt, regardless of what anybody says. Number six, kids become victims of relentless bullying because they are, one, low in self-esteem, or two, have some trait that makes them different. Now, the truth behind that is being a victim of relentless bullying is the major cause of low self-esteem. It can happen to practically anyone and will destroy the self-esteem in the most attractive, talented, intelligent, and confident kids. So what you and I just said is, of course, what he's repeating right here. And number two, many kids have obvious imperfections and differences, yet they do not become victims of bullying. And or, I want to add to that, or they purely and simply overcome it. We talked the other day about Barbara Streisand. Remember we talked about the... I've read stories about her where her first several agents wouldn't even talk to her unless she went and got a nose job, and she refused. And she ended up taking a stand about it. And you have to know, when she was in school, she probably got picked on about her nose. I mean, she had to have. So she took a stand the other way. She was like, you don't like my nose? Well, now you got to look at it every day, like it or lump it, you know. So I do think that obvious imperfections in us makes us, it can either break us or make us. And it's up to you as to how you make that work for you. I mentioned the other day about my grandson, Josh. He has, he's growing into himself. He's like a, he's like this big, lanky, clumsy kid. He's 17. And he's worn his hair Justin Bieber style for so long because everybody in the family picks on his big ears. And he's going in the Army. So he had me shave his head day after Christmas, I think it was. And he said, how big are my ears going to look, Graham? And I said, honey, believe it or not, you're growing into your ears. Your ears don't look all that big anymore. You're not that skinny little boy with big ears anymore. So they just look normal. And he goes, are you sure, Grandma? And I said, yes, I'm sure. Isn't it funny, though, he can't look at it himself and see the difference?
Because No, and this whole time he still thinks that he has that issue. That's funny.
So I did his haircut, and he went out. And I said, are you upset? And he goes, no. He says, I think it looks fine. And I said, well, you're right. And one of the other kids, of course, couldn't leave it alone, said, yes, Josh, you still have big ears, or something like that to him. But he just smiled because now he sees it in a different light, which is the healthy thing to have happen. So, but, you know, I can imagine, too, that sometimes you just can't be that healthy about it. So I understand that.
Let me ask you a question. Is the book saying that it's a myth, like it's not true, that kids that become victims of bullies is because they have a low self-esteem? Is the book saying that's not true, or the book is saying that is true?
Well, the answer to it is being a victim of relentless bullying is the major cause of low self-esteem. So they're not saying that. They're saying that if it's relentless, just like you and I just said, if somebody doesn't ever leave you alone, eventually you believe everything they're saying. And it may be true. You know, it may be true that you have Barbara Streisand's nose. But
yeah, because
all,
I've seen both sets of, like you were just talking about, like with Barbara Streisand, a perfect example. But I remember knowing people that had scars or there was something obvious about them that was not right. I remember one kid had polio, so his left arm was like crippled. But his parents, the parents of these kids, and it was only two kids I can remember, were like, they told the kids, you're different. Kids may make fun of you, but that's only because they're jealous because you're special. So they actually made the kids like proud of who they were, and then sure enough, when their classmates would try to put them down for being different, they didn't care. They smiled and ended up being left alone. And they ended up becoming friends with some of the kids that were going to pick on them because they really just didn't care. Their parents had made them so comfortable in their own skin with all their imperfections that they literally didn't care. And then I saw other kids that really had like nothing wrong with them, and you know, the kids would pick on them over something that wasn't even true, and they would just completely lose it. So it really is our own perceptions of ourselves and how comfortable we are in our own skin and with our own imperfections and not caring about them. You know,
well,
go ahead.
How do you, two of the major afflictions for young teenage girls today, bulimia and anorexia, they are both caused by believing somebody else's evaluation of you.
Yep.
Leading it to the point where that's what you see as well. Do you remember the young woman that joined us at the Institute, I want to say it was later on in years, maybe 2009, she was there, and she was like, she looked like a paper doll. She was minuscule, tiny to the point of looking like you should have set her on the top of a shelf.
Yeah, she looked like a child, not like, because she wasn't she like in her 20s or something?
Yes. And
she was a child.
Well, she wasn't a child. She was in her late 20s.
That's what I'm saying. She didn't look like an adult.
No, she did not. But she and I chatted many times, and we stood in front of a mirror, and I said to her, what do you see? And she looked at me, and she said, you and I are about the same size.
Oh, my God.
And I burst into laughter, Shelley. I thought she was making a joke. And she looked at me, and she says, what? And I said, please, honey. And she goes, I'm serious, Rainey. I have a major weight problem.
Wow.
It was several minutes before I even had a clue as to what to say. So for several minutes, I just stood there looking at her and looking at her and I standing in the mirror. And I mean, it was like, God, Goliath and I will never forget her saying that to me. And I said, you don't really see us as the same size. And she said, no, you're taller than I am. And, you know, and she said, but you're a little bit bigger than I am, you know, like bigger. She said, but we have the same problems. And I said, okay.
Oh.
So again, this is, this is a part of the illness. They never, they start believing what other people have said to them, and then they can't let go of it. So that's a real deep illness, and I've never forgotten her. And she was very, very wealthy, got any kind of help she ever needed to get her through that, and I've often wondered even if she's still with us. I do have a success story with anorexia and bulimia from one of our guests there who finally made it to the other side and is happy and in really, really wonderful shape today. So it is something that you can overcome. If you are listening and you are fighting this, I don't want you believing the first story I told, which is a true life story, but doesn't have to be your story, because I do have a young woman who was struggling just as much, who is now, it's been 6 years, and she is happy and healthy. So, but she also got a lot of really, really special support from somebody very close to her. Her own mother saw her through to the other side, and she's great now. So,
that's excellent. Yeah.
But again, you know, it even says here that sometimes there's kids with imperfections, and they don't become victims of the bullying because they just purely and simply don't care what you think of them or don't believe you. Whichever one saves them, it does in some cases. The Sticks and Stones slogan is a lie. The truth, the Sticks and Stones slogan was never meant to be a statement of truth. It is an age-old solution to becoming a victim of relentless teasing and continues to be useful to those who understand and apply it. In other words, it doesn't mean they really don't hurt you. And it doesn't mean that sticks and stones are the only thing that can cause you pain. It is meant to be kind of like a
a piece of advice that words shouldn't hurt you because they can only hurt you if you let them. I think it's just a piece of advice, not a statement of fact.
Well, it is, but if you'd called it a statement of or a piece of advice, sticks and stones may hurt you, but how does it go? Sticks and stones will break my bones.
Stones may break your bones, but words can never hurt you. I think that's how it goes, something like that.
And that is true. Sticks and stones can break your bones, but it isn't true that words can never hurt you. So, but the age-old solution to becoming a victim of relentless teasing and continues to be useful to those who understand and apply it. So, in other words, he wants you to get the fact that it is true but not true. Words can't hurt you.
It actually is true because words can't hurt you unless you let them hurt you. If somebody throws a stick or a stone at you or they whack you with a bat or something, you can't choose to be hurt or not hurt. If somebody hits you with a bat and they break your arm's broken. It's not a choice. It's a reaction to the impact. But if somebody says something mean or cruel to you, you have a choice. You can either allow it to hurt you or ignore it and, like Izzy says, say so, okay? So it really is a truthful statement. It's just that people have to be taught, especially children, have to be taught not to buy into mean things that are said to them. Just because somebody says you're stupid or ugly or you're not popular or all the other things that they would say to somebody, you're not pretty or whatever, all right, they have to choose to say so or, well, that's your opinion or just smile at them and walk away and leave them holding their insult. So words can't hurt you. What hurts you is your reaction to the words. The words are not what's hurting you, all right? It's your reaction to the words that either hurt you or leave you in a good place. So it's a choice. So in that particular meaning, it's a very truthful statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm going to... We're down to 5 minutes, and I have a couple that I really wanted to get to. Victims have nothing to do... Oh, wait, sorry. School administration have done nothing to stop bullying because they see it as a rite of passage. That's the myth, and the truth is this statement has been spreading like wildfire. Though very few administrators have ever said it, bullying, by definition, is not a rite of passage. If it were, it would be over as soon as the victim performed the rite. Bullying is repetitive, ostracizing, and unsolicited by the target. It's hazing that is a rite of passage, not bullying.
Right.
The purpose of hazing is to initiate members into an exclusive group and is engaged in willingly by the candidate for the membership. Hazing is, in fact, the opposite of bullying. Okay, now that's a pretty heavy paragraph. And what it's saying to us is that, and I've heard that, everybody gets bullied. It's part of growing up. Toughens you up. It makes you stronger if people pick on you a little bit. You can handle it. We're a family of picker-oners. But the difference here is we love each other. And so picking on somebody and kidding with somebody, my kids, I laugh a lot, and I laugh very heartily. Well, many years ago, as a matter of fact, one of my kids were looking at me, and we were all laughing, and they said, "Have you ever noticed how when Mom stops laughing, she goes, like that?" I said, "I do not." And I started laughing, and I'll be damned if I don't do that. And I do it almost every time. It's like this sigh at the end of a really hearty belly laugh. And I, for the life of me, don't do it. But I do it without a doubt. Every time I laugh hard, I do that. So now I'll get laughing. They all wait for me to be done, and everybody goes at the same time.
Yes.
So, but, you know, that's picking on me. You know, that's kidding with me. And that's healthy and that's good. But the kind of bullying that we're talking about, or the kind of fun being made directed at you that continually hurts your feelings and makes you believe that you are so imperfect and it's out there for the world to see, is harmful to you. And I do believe that school administrations are still struggling with how to deal with all of this. And, of course, we talk about that through this whole book.
I think a lot of school administration minimizes what's going on because they think it's just normal banter. You know, it's just kids picking on each other. I think a lot of school administrators don't look at the facts and see how over the top the bullying activity is and how victimized the victim is becoming, and they don't do anything to find out why the bully is so angry and how the victim is being basically torn down by the activity, and they have an opportunity of actually uplifting both of the children if they were to handle it properly.
Mm-hmm. Well, but again, that takes
training.
Takes a lot of training, and it takes a lot of time. And one of the things is he says in every time I talk to him, he says, "This is not one of those things that can be left up to somebody else to fix. The whole idea is to teach your child how to deal with it." Because
that's
you
right.
Cannot expect parents, administrators, bosses in the workplace to get involved. The whole idea of his whole workbook is to teach your kid how to say so. You know?
Yep.
And that's it. Really, that's it in a nutshell. He wants to not just stand up for themselves, but not give any credence to something
somebody
else. And
this is why I talked about that. When I was in sports, I remember there was one girl that, for whatever reason was, just didn't like me, and she was picking on me one day, but I recognized that she was picking on me and trying to embarrass me, so I just laughed like I thought she was joking with me, like being buddies with me. The rest of the girls laughed, and she never picked on me again because it made her look foolish. And then I just went on about my business. And, I mean, it was a dud. She didn't get the reaction she was looking for, and she never picked on me again because I acted like she wasn't picking on me, and so it took all the fun out of it for her. So it really is effective to do that.
That is his answer. We're down to 10 seconds. We'll take off with this on Thursday and finish up this part, and then we're also going to talk about teen drug use and some of the problems that we still have that are existing out there right now in our own little neighborhood and world. So I want to wish everybody a very, very, very happy beginning to the new year. And we will be back Thursday morning. And everybody go out there and be safe tonight, though. Don't do anything silly. Lots of fireworks around town, so you can enjoy those. God bless everybody. Have a great day. Thanks, Shel. I'll talk to you in a little bit.
Okay, Irene. Have a great day. Have a wonderful New Year's, everyone. Talk to you on Thursday.
Bye-bye.